A Vol Radio Network classic game, the 2006 Tennessee-Georgia game. And we are fortunate now we get to preview that and hang out and just chat a little bit with Vol for Life, Josh McNeil. Welcome him on the Stanley Fencing Gates hotline right now. Josh McNeil, what's going on, brother?
Hey, what's going on, man? Glad to be here.
You got me and you got Brian Rice. So you don't know Brian Rice, but I'll give you the he's cool. Don't worry about it. It's okay. He's cool.
All right. If you say so, I believe it.
So,
right, well, it's good that you could take Eric's word for it right now.
All right. So it's been fun. The Vol Network has been playing classic games on Saturdays, and this Saturday is the 2006 Georgia game. Give me the first thing, Josh McNeil. It's your second start, Tennessee Georgia in Athens, 2006. What do you remember?
Yeah, I just remember it. Probably the craziest game I ever played in. I mean, it was my second start. My first start was at Memphis, and you know, going from the Liberty Bowl to Between the Hedges, it's not even a comparable experience, especially being on the road. I think they scored a couple of touchdowns. We were down early, and we came back and won. And it's still to this day probably the funnest game I played in as a player, for sure. The atmosphere was crazy. It was a night game. You were on fire. We were down early, came all the way back. A lot of big plays in that game. It was a, you know, a lot of fun all the way around.
So I'll give you one of my favorite. I have a lot of fun Josh McNeil stories. Would it be safe to say, Josh, that you played as an undersized offensive lineman in the Southeastern Conference?
Yes, I would say it would be very safe to say that, yeah.
But it was one of your best attributes. It was always fun, too. And so, like, it was kind of like whenever I would scramble and someone wouldn't catch me, I'd be the first person to turn and be like, wow, dude, that's on film. You not catching me right there is on – that's on film. Hey, you guys see that? Like, I remember we're playing Georgia. I forget what quarter it was, but I think it was LaMarcus Coker – gashed him on one, and you took a guy that probably weighed, by that point in the season, what you'd normally weigh? You'd be what, like 300 to start the year, and you probably what, like 270 by then?
Yeah, 280, if it was a good day, yeah.
A good
probably
day?
270 at best, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So,
and most
so
of the guys were 350, 360, yeah.
So this guy was probably at least 330, 340 on the defensive line for Georgia, and you just crushed him. And I'll never forget, I hand the ball off, and I got reamed for not making a good play fake because I was watching you lay on top of him, and all I could hear was you laughing hysterically, like just like dying laughing. I was like, man, what's so funny? And then I hear you on top of the guy going, ha ha, you weigh 80 pounds more than me. This is you're terrible. Ha! And you were just taking his soul, trash talking. It was one of my favorite moments of the game.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like me. It sounds a lot like the way I played. I mean, you know, I may have been undersized, but my goal was to get on you before you got on me and just keep going. And, you know, it ended up in a lot of pancakes. So that was a fun time for sure.
Josh, who was the best – and you don't have to answer present company just because it's his show – but who was the best player that you played with when you were at Tennessee?
Man, I kind of went through the ringer. You know, early on we had you know, Glenn Dorsey at LSU was a very, you know, high-profile thing. He was number three pick. It's just him and that entire defensive line was pretty good. That Georgia game he's talking about, you know, they had a very young Geno Atkins who went on to play in the league for a long, long time. You know, the guys from Cal were pretty tough, too. That, you know, they may not be, you know, highly remembered, but Brandon Mebane,
that's right. I know that's him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just short, stumpy, strong. Then they had that other big Hawaiian guy. So it's pretty hard to pick out one guy in particular that was just really, really good. You know, obviously Glenn Dorsey was probably drafted the highest of all those. But, you know, when you play in the SEC, you kind of have the fortune of – you got to bring it every week. There is no let off week.
It doesn't matter who you play, but the SEC, especially from a defensive line standpoint, man. I mean, I remember playing Mississippi State. Georgia was always one of those teams that always had big, strong, fast, athletic defensive linemen. And you know, in that game, we did a good job of using our athleticism up front too to get out. We hit a lot of screen passes, did a lot of quick passing. Did a lot of play action stuff. Are there any plays you remember specifically from the game, like that we ran or anything like that? It's funny, people always, forget how, it can be 10 years later and you'll still remember something that happened in the football
game. Yeah, like I said, I mean, it was a wild game. And a lot of that was just because kind of what was going on in the huddle. As I said, I mean, we were getting beat pretty bad early on, and you weren't a real big rah-rah guy. You definitely, I mean, you were one of the best to do it. You exuded a lot of confidence, but particularly that game, it's like, I remember one play, we got a turnover, I think, and then we came back in the huddle, and you just said, look, if you can hold on long enough, it was like a Rambo six slant, deep pass. You're like, if you hold them long enough, this is a 40-yard touchdown, 50-yard touchdown, and that's just something that you really rarely did. And man, you called it. You were right. It was a touchdown. I mean, it looked beautiful, and it was just fun to be a part of. Just as watching as you got in the huddle, it's just like, all right, if you guys can just do your job long enough, I'm going to take this. I'm going to take it to the house. That was a very.
I remember you're hyping me up a little bit. It was it wasn't 40 or 50, but it was a ball down the middle, probably like a 30-yard pass to Brett Smith. It was a Rambo six slant. I forget his first name. Jackson, I think, was his a linebacker, fast flow, super athletic NFL guy. And we knew if we could hold them in play action, their nickel was real soft. So if you go back and watch that game, Brett Smith catches a touchdown down the middle. It just barely misses the goalpost. Good for him, or he'd probably have some Angie issues. But he kind of dives right there. Their safeties would get real wide in cover two, and so we ran that quick little play fake, held the linebacker. Brett got a free release down the middle, and he ended up catching a touchdown. We were down 24-14 at half, came back to outscore them 37-9 in the second half for a 51-33 victory.
Yeah, 51-33. I remember it was a big swing in the second half. I mean, like, we blocked a punt. We had some turnovers. We had some really big plays on offense. I mean, we just caught fire, and it was like a completely different game between the first and the second half. Like I said, that was my first SEC start, so I was taking it all in, and all the emotions, and just, going into halftime and, going into halftime losing. That's never a fun experience, especially under Coach Fulmer, especially with all the mistakes we were making, and just, you could just kind of just feel it that, we were losing, but we weren't losing because we were beating ourselves at that point. We came out in the second half and we showed what we were about. So it was a lot of fun.
One of the plays that happened early in that second half, and I don't know what you remember from it, but it seems to be a topic of conversation. Any of us, anytime I talk to you or Big Ant or Ramon or any of the guys, Arian, I scored a rushing touchdown in this football game. It was the lone TD. It was indeed a 1 yard quarterback sneak behind one Josh McNeil. And I'll never forget. There's no audio of it. It can't be proven. I'm going to say I wasn't saying it, but you guys always give me crap and say that I was in the end zone, laying there holding the ball like a kid opening his first Christmas present, yelling, "Did I score? Did I score? Did I score?" And you guys were all laughing at me like, "Oh my, you're embarrassing us." Yes. Yes, Ainge, you did indeed score a rushing touchdown.
Yeah.
Did that really happen?
Well, from all the quarterback sneaks we did, especially that year and the next year, it's like when you're in the middle, you really can't tell where you are, what's going on. I mean, you're just in a big pile of bodies and everybody's around. So, but yeah, I do remember that play. We were very successful in our attempts on third and even on fourth down. It's like Coach Cutcliffe had enough confidence in us to get the job done. And that was a very fun experience just because, like you said, that wasn't a, an everyday thing to get you a touchdown, on the road, running the ball, quarterback sneak, you had no idea if you scored or not. I'm just like, man, I hope you did because I don't want to do this again.
Yeah. Why are you asking me? I'm under four guys that weigh a collective 900 pounds. I can't tell if you scored.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I probably had my eyes shut and everything. Did I score?
That's how he does the radio show, too, every day. Josh, you guys went from a 2016 with all those receivers and all that production to The next year, having to replace a lot of it at receiver, but you guys as a line helped Eric set a record for keeping his jersey clean. What was the mentality going into that season? Did you know that you were going to have to step up knowing they were replacing the receivers, or was it something else that led to that success?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things. I think, you know, a lot of guys, they never talk about the system that they're in. And I think going into that year, it was like we realized we had some undersized receivers that could all catch. You know, Coach Cutcliffe, we went to a no-huddle offense. It was very rare, I would say, during that whole season where, you know, we had to pass protect very long. It was like we ran a 5-wide, 4-wide, no-huddle system. Eric knew he was going to go with the ball. We had some very good players, and certainly we took a lot of pride in him not getting hit. Because we knew if we could just keep them off of him, you know, give him enough time to do what he does, that it was going to be a good day, and it usually was. But, you know, for the most part, I would say the no huddle, the type of system, always calling good plays at the line of scrimmage and making sure you're not going into bad looks. I mean, that all is a factor when it comes to that number.
Well, and I think the biggest thing that helped all of that was in that off season going into that year, because of the things we were going to be lacking, our self-scout told us we play behind the sticks too often. And if we could stay ahead of the sticks, and we could, then we have obviously a much better chance to do all these things and call the right plays and do it at the line. And right, wrong, or indifferent, there was rarely a play ever that year. We threw the ball over 500 times where all 11 guys on the field didn't know exactly what was going to happen, where the play was going, who was protected. We always knew. It didn't mean you made every block, but I'll bet there's not a snap out there where Josh and the guys up front didn't know, hey, you three have those three. You two big on big over this side. Running back, you're this guy to that guy. I mean, we were all on the same page on every single snap offensively. So there was nothing that defense could do to confuse us. So it came down to, all right, well, you three have those three. Do your three block those three? And of course, there's plays where guys miss blocks and that kind of stuff. But if that's all you're anticipating, then you can throw the ball away. You can scramble, you know, you can stay ahead of the sticks. It was just a conscious approach. It was probably one of the best. I've heard Cut talk about it publicly. It's probably, in his opinion, his best coaching job of his entire career was what he did with Josh, myself, you know, because that's where a lot of the communication goes. It's from the center of the quarterback and then hand signal into the running backs and all those guys. It took a lot of intelligent guys and a lot of good coaching, but that's a record that'll never be touched.
Yeah, I can still remember to this day. It's like, you know, we ran the no huddle offense, and it's like you had Florida, you had Texas, you had Hawaii, you had all these different protections that you would, you know, 5, 6, 7 man protections. And then you're exactly right. It's like, you know, for us, somebody would have to completely whiff because we were always in a very good position. That, you know, that did happen, but it rarely happened. And yeah, I think it's exactly like you said. I mean, every play that we went into, we made sure that from an offense, you know, whether it was 4-on-3 or 1-on-1, we were always, you know, at an advantage, or we made sure that we weren't in a disadvantage. We never ran bad plays. You know, you had guys like Lucas, you had guys like Austin. I mean, you know, they could all catch. Hancock, it was like they could all catch. It was like everyone. That offense was pretty cool in particular, just because, you know, there wasn't a Meacham or a Brett Smith or a Swain. It was just like everybody had a job to do and everybody did it pretty well. And we ended up being, you know, one of the best offenses in SEC that year, which is pretty cool.
You know, the 2006 Tennessee-Georgia game that's going to be coming up here pretty soon to listen to, Vol Radio Network Classic. If you want to know what really won the football game, because I don't think I made you do it against Memphis, because I'm pretty sure that game, I'm pretty sure we were already whipping them. But I'm pretty sure the Georgia game was the first time that you experienced the bougie quarterback, Angie, saying, Josh, you got to change your pants, dude.
Yeah.
Josh McNeil and I were like best friends in college. Like, think about him all the time, still to this day, good friends. Like, from that time through the rest of our time playing together, I don't know that I ever got looked at more cockeyed and cross-eyed and like, man, I know I can't hit this guy, but man, I want to. When we'd get into halftime, and then I'd walk over to Josh, and he'd see me come, and he'd be like, no, Not today. I got an ankle swollen. I got this. I'm not retaping all this. And I'd be like, dude, you got to change your pants.
Yeah.
Was that the worst ever looking back on it? Like making you change pants at halftime?
Well, because we had like 20 minutes. And I mean, we had knee braces and ankles taped up. And I mean, it's like, you know, I barely get a minute to sit down and coach is in my ear. And it's like, man, you got to change your pants. I'm like, this is going to last for like two plays of the first series. And then it's going to be exactly the second. But, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, even though I was undersized, I do remember, you know, I'm a Mississippi boy. I sweat a lot. And, I mean, from warm-ups on, it would just be like raining, you know.
Yeah. He talks about that.
Pretty much any hot weather game.
I've talked about it before. We don't need to do that right now.
He talks about it all the time, Josh. He really does. I can't let you go without asking about perhaps the most famous photo of your playing career. And that was you tying together the shoestrings of a Florida player in 2008. Can you tell me the story behind that photo?
Yeah, sure. And that was the funniest thing about the photo to me is just out of all the stuff I've done, said, you know, just in piles. And, you know, I really prided myself on being an aggressive player. I mean, it was just, we were getting beat. I think the player was Carlos Dunlap, who played forever in the NFL.
I was just
sitting in a pile with a bunch of people on top of me. And at that moment, his shoe was just right there. And I was like, you know, hey, I bet this guy won't kind of stance as fast, you know, if his shoes are untied. And so for whatever reason, I decided to untie his shoe while I was sitting there and couldn't move. And the guy got a picture of it. And it's just funny to me, you know, all the stuff, you know, and just all the crap talk and just different things over the course of a career. That was like the one thing that got honed in on at that one time. That's funny to me.
Hey, just take it. Of all the things that you did, Josh, if that's the one people remember, then let it happen. Walk away, backflip, and take it to the house.
It's like, you know.
Yeah.
I think Antonio, I'll take my fame where I can get it.
There you go. I think Antonio Wardlow got on Sports Illustrated for blocking and recovering a punt in the Georgia game.
Yep, he did. I remember that too.
Yeah.
I remember that cover. Yep.
Good stuff. Well, I've never listened to the broadcast, so I can't wait to sit here and listen to it.
Yeah, it's fun. A lot of fun.
Josh, we appreciate you giving us your time this morning. Before we let you get back to work, what are you doing now, and how are you getting along now as this many years removed from your football career?
Well, life is good. I'm still in the state of Tennessee. Haven't left since I went to school there. I live in the Memphis area. Less than a year out from getting married, just working. You know, my life is good. I can't complain, that's for sure. I'm very blessed. And, you know, I know Eric's doing well, and it's always good to see old guys, you know, doing well. And, definitely doing well. And just, I'm in sales now, doing energy projects, LED lighting, HVAC. I've been doing that for several years. And it's, you know, it's paid off pretty well.
Let me know next time you're in East Tennessee, brother.
I will, man. Will do. Good to hear from you.
Josh, thank you.